Behind me, it smells like pine in here. It smells so good.
Do you guys
Yeah.
remember? Light one candle for the Maccabee
Oh
children.
my God. Wow.
I had a dream
Light
that we were
one
on this like
candle
quiz
for
show, and they were like, which of the three of you has the best memory? And I was like, Maddie. And then I went into like this tangent about like your musical
Oh
memory.
my gosh, it's insane.
That's a fun fact for you. That was like 2 nights ago too, so we're talking recent dream.
That's, I mean, it's actually so factual.
Yeah.
Like, Maddie has, well, actually, okay, but here's the thing. Maddie's memory of events is not as good.
That's true. But Maddie could pull out a piece of music from when she was 2 years old
Right, I know.
and sing like
Yeah.
the bass part that she didn't even sing.
I
I
have
have a
touche.
really amazing memory for music and for Danganronpa characters, and that's it.
That's, those are, I mean, I can't blame you
Wow.
for that.
I have a memory of pop culture, and that's it.
And I have a memory of things that I have experienced. I'm very good at remembering the things that have happened
That's kind of the
in
most
my
important
last
thing to
three.
remember, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. Arguably.
Yeah.
We could do really well as a group on like Jeopardy.
Oh my
I
gosh, if we could be a
think we would.
team, yeah. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh, we would kill it.
Yeah. Especially if there's a category, Caroline's Life Events.
Just one category. Perfect. Love it. Also, hi everyone. Thanks for just listening
Hey.
to us riff for a little bit. Welcome back to the Ultra Hope Girls.
Welcome.
Welcome
Back.
We're hanging. Today we're going to be diving into V3, Chapter 1, long awaited, I'm sure,
Woohoo.
because these episodes are, I mean, we could go on for 3 hours and it'll be three episodes, so
Yeah.
we do
We
not know what's
probably
ahead of
will.
us. We probably
We
will.
might.
We're going to go for V3 hours, am I right? But just so you all know, this episode will spoil.
Chapter 1, V3.
There you go. So without further ado, let's get started.
I'm Maddie.
And
I'm Marin.
I'm Caroline, and we are the Ultra Hope Girls.
Welcome to the Danganronpa
Podcast. You're on the threshold of an amazing episode. Showtime.
We are.
Yeah,
Yay!
we are. I really said that with such like gravitas. Like, we are.
We are the Ultra
Ooh,
Hope Girls.
gravitas. I like that
Thank you. word.
I
I might
really
show up
did
as a
just.
GRE for
Oh,
me.
yeah, it could, definitely. So, guys, what did we all think of chapter one? Pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy.
Whoa. I know. This game, I just remember, like, well, okay. I did predict how it was going to end.
You did.
I did, which is
This is true.
a little insane of me. But also, I just remember playing it and getting to the end and being like, holy cow, like, this game is going to be l unlike anything we've experienced so far. Like, I just knew it was going to be crazy, because they were willing to go to that level for the first trial, which is so amazing. So anyway,
It's
I,
true.
yeah, and I feel like replaying it, I got a deeper appreciation of this game, if I'm being honest. Like, I think I poop on it a little more, but it's so sophisticated, like at a storytelling and like a gameplay level for the most part. So, yeah.
Definitely. So we've lost our female protagonist in a main game. That was pretty fast. I did want to talk about Kaede, though. I don't know if it's too soon to do that. But not really about like the end of this
Just
chapter,
as a
but
character.
just as a character. And like
Yeah.
I know like we've talked about it a little bit in these first few episodes of this season, but I do want to talk about, I feel like I might be a little bit harder on her, and part of me wonders if that's because she is a woman. And like this is me like checking myself, because there was a part in this chapter where Kokichi is like, you won't let us give up, and no matter what we say, you have the moral high ground. When you say we can't give up, you're not inspiring us, you're strong-arming us. And this is a complete 180 reaction to how the Trigger Happy Havoc cast felt about Makoto doing the exact same thing. And it just kind of gave me those vibes of when like you know, there's like a strong woman and she gets called bossy versus like a strong man is called a leader. And I don't know, it just kind of made me think, like, I wonder if that's a little bit where like some of the hate for Kaede comes from, is maybe like more of a internal bias.
Yeah, I had the same thought actually. Yeah, when I was playing, because I was like, wow, like she's really like quite positive, but it's not in a way that's annoying. She's just, it's, yeah. And so I totally hear what you're saying. And I really like her so much more on this playthrough. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
I like her a lot more in this one too. And I feel like I liked her more than the two of you did even on the first playthrough, but even going back through this, like, I really appreciate the role that she plays in this game. And I kind of hate that they took her from us so soon. Like, I would have loved to see what a full length Danganronpa game looked like with Kaede as a protagonist for all of these different cases. You know what I mean? I would have loved to see that. And I think it's, I'm really torn about the, I mean, we can get to this more towards kind of the end of the chapter, but I'm honestly really torn on where I stand in terms of whether I liked or disliked the fact that Kaede was the culprit. It's funny because I don't know if you got, you guys probably, my guess would be that you guys are familiar with this, but do you know like the, have you heard of like the 10 commandments or like the rules for like writing a detective novel? I think we might have touched on that before.
I have not heard that.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's, what I was trying to pull up, because I wanted to remember who like coined these 10 commandments. So there's like a few different things, but I am looking on, this is from the Agatha Christie wiki. So agathachristie.fandom.com. And it's called The Rules of Detective Fiction. And it's talking about how like during like, it's calling it the golden age of detective fiction, which was kind of around like Agatha Christie's time or shortly before. There was a writer named Ronald Knox who in 1929 came up with the 10 commandments for writing a detective story, and a similar list of 20 rules for writing a detective story came out, I think, around the same time by an S.S. Van Dyne. And a couple of these are interesting here. Okay, so there's a couple of like rules that are shared between these two lists that are like, if you do this as a detective fiction writer, like, you are not cool. You can't do this because everyone will hate you and like that kind of thing. The first rule is like the culprit has to be mentioned early on in the story. It can't be someone who's thrown in like randomly at the end, right? Because that's kind of like cheating, you know, if it's a whodunit and you don't know who that person even is until three quarters of the way through the book.
At Nancy Drew Secrets Can Kill.
Yeah.
Literally.
Nancy Drew breaks some of these rules. But another rule is that there should be nothing supernatural if it's a true detective story. There's a couple like funny rules. There's some of these that are like really outdated, but like one of them says, it's S.S. Van Dyne says, it shouldn't be servants, butlers, cooks or footmen should never be the culprit, which is interesting to me. But there are a bunch of rules. So rule number 7 on Ronald Knox's 10 commandments, the detective himself must not commit the crime. Rule number 8, the detective is bound to declare any clues which he may discover. So essentially saying that the detective is not allowed to keep secrets from the reader. And that's similar to S.S. Van Dyne's rule number 1, which says the reader must have equal opportunity with the detective for solving the mystery. All clues must be plainly stated and described. And number 2, no willful tricks or deceptions may be played on the reader other than those played legitimately by the criminal on the detective himself. So back in the 30s, basically, they came out with these lists based on like, I guess what they thought were cheats, essentially, by the author as a way to cheat their readers. And they felt that it was unfair to have the detective be the culprit or to have the detective or protagonist conceal information from the reader, which this chapter of Danganronpa does both of those things very much so. And so majorly, majorly breaks these rules, which is obviously controversial. So I know I'm a little bit torn about it, but what are your guys' thoughts on the rule breaking that is occurring there?
Oh, I love it. because so Agatha Christie wrote a very famous novel that I'm about to spoil, but it has the same ending as this trial. But it's called The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. And it's basically the person narrating the book is the murderer. And it's brilliant. And it was written in 1926. And I just think that here's how I feel. I think rules like that limit creativity and limit possibility of where things can go, because you can figure out that Coyote is the murderer. I did it. And like, it's not like
you're special.
Thank you. I am special. That's what my mom says all the time. Oh no, I'm just kidding. You know, those jokes where it's like, my mom says I'm special. No. But anyway, and so because of that, I just think like, I don't think there are rules to break. Cause I think if it works and it has an impact on the reader or the consumer of the media, that's what matters. Right. And we're getting into an era now where we have seen it all. We've seen the way these detective stories have been told time and time again. And to make things new and different and evolve, you have to break those rules. You have to. I mean, it's just like, yeah. And I can't help but think of like the show or the rule you mentioned about no supernatural stuff, or it like can't be a mystery, because the TV show Wednesday has come out and it's essentially a supernatural mystery, and it's good. And I had fun solving it along the way, you know, and it was solvable, you know, cause it was murder, but it just was supernatural murders, you know? So anyway, so yeah, I just think that that's my opinion. There you go. There it is.
Yeah. You heard it here first. Danganronpa's a bad game. Based on that rule set. So
right, exactly.
No, I completely agree. I think rules are made to be broken. And when people write rule sets like that, that's actually where, like, personally as a creator, I find the most inspiration is saying, like, how would I break that? Like, you know, so yeah, no, I completely agree.
Yeah, I think it's I totally agree with the rules like kind of staunching creativity sort of idea. At the same time, like I said, I have mixed feelings, blah blah blah. I did feel a little bit cheated at the end of this chapter, being like, oh my goodness, like it was Coyote all along. Like there were thoughts going through her head that we were not privy to, even though we were privy to some of the thoughts going through her head, but not all of them. And like the moment when she was like following Shuichi out of the classroom, and she like takes in theory, takes the shot put ball out of her backpack and throws it down the vent. The only thing it says in the moment in narration is, I dropped everything I was holding and followed Shuichi. I was like, really? Like that's, I couldn't help but feel a little bit cheated by that. But I do think it makes for a really good twist. And I do think one of the reasons why, like you mentioned, Caroline, one of the reasons why Agatha Christie became so huge is because she bent and broke a lot of these rules, and she was like revolutionary in her stories, and that's part of the reason why these lists are on her wiki. It's because right. She was like she broke the rules, and she like was a revolutionary, which is cool. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't help but feel a little like, really?
No, but
I also, yeah, go ahead, Caroline.
I was just gonna say, no, but in hindsight, I just think that they did it really well. Like, I think that it doesn't sneak up on you in the way that you just mentioned. I really don't think it does, because of the way it's like Kaede as a character doesn't even want to admit to herself that she did something like that.
That's really true.
That's how I took it. It's like she's almost in denial, and then, you know, obviously she doesn't take the first blood perk because that wasn't her intention. Her intention was to end the game, right? And so there's some shame there. And I think that this is just a storytelling mechanism to show that internal struggle with like what she's trying to maybe ignore for herself.
That's really true.
But it's all there.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I also think this chapter is so much better on a replay, or maybe not better on a replay, but different on a replay, because again, like we were just talking about, I didn't like Coyote the first time through, but the second time through, I'm seeing some of the things that I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, like can she move on? Like the book stacking, I was like, Shuichi is the ultimate detective. Please just trust him and move on from stacking the books. Like, stop it. Or like in the trial, like she has the total like Harry Potter protagonist moment where she's like, I have to be the one to solve this, and I'm going to put together all the clues, and you know, it's my like I have to do this. And she wasn't being the Harry Potter protagonist. She was saying like, you know, like this was the whole point of her doing this, was to figure out who was the mastermind. It was more of like an internal like risk,
right?
So replaying it, I feel like it takes those moments where, you know, like Kaede is seemingly the worst it like makes you rethink them to where like, no, she's actually just doing something completely different, and maybe you like didn't see it. Yeah,
I mean, I have to give her kudos for doing something, you know, right. I never want to condone murder, but don't take that out of context,
but
I never want to condone murder, but she's the only one who really like does something. I mean, Rentaro went down to the bookcase to do something. We'll never know. Well, maybe we'll know, but at this point, we don't know what that was. But Kaede is the only one who actually is like, I'm going to do something to make sure that we don't all get killed at the end of this time limit, right? Yeah. Like, all due respect to Kaito and the others, but when they were gathering, being like, we're gonna fight, it's like, well, you're gonna,
yeah, like, you're not gonna fight.
Kaede was the only one who actually like
tried to do something about it
and tried to save everyone.
Can we talk about the seven people Kaito picked to be most useful?
Literally love. But here's the thing, I get the logic. So we have Kaito, we have Maki, and I don't know why she's there, because she's just kind of like weird and doesn't seem to want to cooperate very much, you know, so it's like, why did he invite her? And then Angie, I guess it's like the power of God and anime on my side. And then Himiko can do magic, so, you know, that. And then Tenko is like the only obvious choice of pretty much all of the rest. I can't remember who the other one is.
Gonta and Rentaro.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I get Gonta.
Yeah, yeah, Gonta I get, but Rentaro, he's an e-boy. What is he doing there?
It's funny because it's funny also because Aikido, what Tenko does, I mean, she does Neo Aikido, but Aikido is strictly a self-defense martial art. It's like maneuvers to like, if someone's coming at you and attacking you, you get out of their way, or you like pin them to the ground in a way that like theoretically doesn't hurt them, but like makes them not able to hurt you. It's like, you don't like attack people with Aikido.
But maybe that's the Neo part of it, is it has attack moves. That really did crack me up. I forgot about that like detail, and I was like, oh my god, are you joking? It's interesting, the rules of this killing game are a little bit different than the past, where there can be two surviving students instead of one, which that is incredibly interesting. And it kind of gives me like Hunger Games vibes, where they kind of made that rule and they were like, okay, well, if two people from the same district make it, they can both live, kind of thing. Yeah,
I literally have on my notes page, until two remain ? Hunger Games vibes.
Yeah, literally. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so it's just interesting and can create the scenario where like two people could team up or that kind of thing, which is interesting.
We also lose that team in this, you know, first chapter. So right. They give you like, I think that personally, I think that that was to deflect away from the fact that we would be losing one of the core team being Kaede Shuichi,
right,
on, you know, the first chapter. It's like, oh well, okay, these two are gonna last the whole game, when in reality, no. They're most definitely not.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's kind of cool. So there's a part after like all the rules are explained and Kaede is trying to like inspire the group, specifically I feel like Shuichi, but the group, and she says, honestly, it would help more if I played a song on the piano instead of gave a speech, which was like, made me cringe a little bit on the inside. Really reminded me of these TikToks that I've been sending Caroline recently that are like, you know, jukebox musicals and how they like transition into song, where it's just like you light me up inside, cause baby you're a firework. like just like how they like do that.
Oh, I love
feel like that would be so funny to see V3 as a jukebox musical, and Kate, it would be like,
but what would be who would be the artist for the V3 jukebox musical? You know what I mean?
Like, that's such a good question.
Who is the artist?
Selena Gomez.
Oh my god, obviously. Why did I not think of that
obviously
sooner?
Yeah. Wow, wait, that's a good question. Audience members, please let us know what you think the jukebox musical featured artist should be. We would love to hear
yes,
that.
Yes, we want to know. Thank you for your contributions. I lolled when Gonta, I have this note and I don't remember the line exactly, like I remember how they did it, but like when Gonta repeated the manhole line just faster, where someone said like do it like or like oh do it faster, or said something that like could be interpreted as like if taken literally, like blah, 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 like reading it faster, and that really cracked me up. I loved that.
That was so funny.
I thought it was interesting that one rule states that Monokuma will never directly commit a murder.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely implied that someone's controlling Monokuma. I mean,
right.
Why say that if, you know, Monokuma is a living
is a sentient being.
Being. Yeah.
Right, he's sentient. He just you know what I mean. Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting though, because I think for the past two games the rules were very explicit saying Monokuma cannot interfere like at all.
Right.
And this time it's like, oh, he won't directly commit a murder, but like maybe he'll set up a Rube Goldberg machine where he like indirectly murders someone by bashing him on the head with a thing, a ball dropped from bookshelves.
Yeah. What Maddie said.
Indirect murder, right?
No, it's interesting. I mean, and I'm saying this not implying anything for the future or anything, but we know from past games that like the rules play a huge role in the cases, and like the changes in the rules play a huge role in the cases. So yeah, it is. I'm curious to see how, perhaps or not, that might play a role later on. I also have a note that I just wanted to make sure we touched on, that Kibo has the strength of a senior citizen.
Yes! An average senior citizen.
Right. So I guess it's like, you know, maybe the person who created him didn't want him to be too powerful where he could like take over the world. You know?
Yeah.
So he's a normal amount of powerful.
Well, he talks about the tragedy that occurred during trial one. Which makes me think Kibo perhaps had an older brother or sister who was maybe too strong for their own good. Maybe had a, I don't know, I envisioned it as like an Of Mice and Men kind of thing.
Oh my gosh. Oh my god. That is horrible.
Where they like try to go hug someone.
So
and like
funny. Kokichi is such a gem. There's this part in here where Kibo is a gem. Kokichi says, Kibo is the mastermind. Everyone thinks so too. And Kibo's like, does everyone really think that? And no one answers. No one defeats him. Kaede's like, can I get to the bottom of this?
And we just move on from that. And poor Kibo is like, oh my gosh, they think I'm the mastermind.
Poor little gem.
You know, he's a little baby. I do love Kibo so much. Like, he is such a cutie little guy.
An icon, truly.
Absolutely.
Can we talk about the escape game in The Great?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. My next note is actually about that. I have, well, my note about this sewer escape fiasco is actually two questions. The first question is, what is the point of having this in the game?
Mm.
Despair.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. Well, we all know the frustration of like when you're playing like a platformer level and you just cannot beat it. And it feels so frustrating because it's like, what skills am I actually using right now? Why can't I beat this platformer game? You know what I mean? And I don't like platformers for that reason, because I always get so angry and I get stuck on a level that I cannot beat and I just give up. But anyway, so I think that there is like a certain sort of despair of like, as a player, you know, and I knew when I first played this that this wasn't going to be an easy escape, obviously, because we have a whole game ahead of us. But like, yeah, I just think it creates that, again, feeling of despair in real life for the player while playing the game, which is something I've already brought up today about Kaede. And it's like very interesting how this game is really experimenting with like storytelling techniques that make us, the player, feel despair in real life to a level of that's not just like, oh, character's dying. It's like things that are also just frustrating and make us feel like we are in the character's shoes, which is really neat.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think it's to make you feel despair. Caroline and I played the game together for the first time. She like watched as I attempted this.
Oh,
this was
gosh.
Many, many, many months ago. And I was so stressed the entire time because I'm like, oh my gosh, like Caroline is watching and I am doing horribly on this escape game. And we are never going to get past this. And I'm in my head like, oh my gosh, like I'm just a bad player at this game. And in reality, you're not really supposed to make it through.
Right.
Stressful. I am just as bad the second time through at this escape game. It's so bad. Yeah.
Well, it's impossible to win. I mean, yeah. It's like you have to be really good at it, but you can win it.
Is that part of your second part, Maddie?
Yeah. Question. Yes, that was my next question, is if you're really good at this mini game, how far can you get?
You can get to the end. And I looked up what happens. There's an end. Yeah. And if you get to it, Monokuma does that. You get a little cutscene. You can play this game with every free time. Each chapter, you get a chance to play this game if you'd like to. I don't know why you'd like to, but you can. And if you play it and you win it on this first chapter, then you get a cutscene with Kaede and she's like, wow, like we made it. This is paraphrasing. Like, wow, we made it. And Monokuma's like, oh, wow, you weren't supposed to beat this. This is super, super hard. And then he opens the doors and it's a very like Trigger Happy Havoc looking door. And you see the outside world. You don't actually see it, but it's like the bright light kind of vibe from the same like Trigger Happy Havoc. And Kaede's like, no, like this can't be it. And that's the end. And then if you beat it on like a later chapter, it's a cutscene with Shuichi.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Hmm. So fun fact. Makes you think.
So even if you make it to the end, it still sucks.
It still sucks. Yeah. And then it's
pointless.
Playing the game.
Right.
Completely pointless. So out of the three games, Trigger Happy Havoc, Danganronpa 2, which what one's that called? Oh, yeah. Goodbye Despair. Forgot what that one was called. And V3, which room setup would you choose as your college dorm?
Oh.
Oh. That's a really good question, Maddie. Wow. Okay, definitely not Trigger Happy Havoc because there are no windows.
I'd pick game 2 because then I have a beachfront property. That's pretty
I would also pick game 2 because it's a nice room. The D2 games are really... the D2 rooms are really nice, actually.
Yeah. I would also pick that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Wow.
I did like the modern flair of this last one, but it wasn't beachfront, so.
Good point.
Property value. Yeah.
I do think that the first game rooms could be really nice if there were not metal bars bolted to all the windows.
Right.
Old thing.
Yeah, no.
I honestly think the V3 setup is my least favorite. I don't know. There's something about the vibes in it that it's just like,
yeah, it feels like
overly modern and like
it feels like a 4-year-old child's like car themed room. But do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it's all so dark.
Wow.
It's
dark, like a kid's room, like where a kid might be like, I want my walls to be black because black is like the color of tires on a car, and then your parents are like, okay, and I guess your room's gonna be black, and then it's black.
I think the Trigger Happy Havoc rooms are my personal least favorite. The V3 game rooms remind me of a hotel room. I don't know if that's a pro, but
related to the rooms, I love how Danganronpa protagonists, they get the best sleep of anyone in this world. And they are in like a life or death situation, but they could just fall asleep like nothing is going on. And I want that kind of energy because I need that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
It was so funny. They're like, okay, let me just sleep for 12 hours. Let me just take an afternoon nap. Like, I hope I don't get murdered in my bed. Like, come on, guys.
True.
That's oh my
so
God.
True.
I don't know if I've shared this with you guys before, but the line where, like, the first, like, morning that Kaede wakes up, she, like, is laying in bed or whatever, and she's like, oh, I can't face the day, but I have to, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a line where she says, I slapped my cheeks and leaped out of bed. And I know that she's, like, on her face, like, oh, slap my face, get myself awake, jump out of bed. But I just, like, the first mental image conjured up in my brain reading that line was, I slapped my cheeks.
Like butt cheeks. I'm screaming.
That's the so secret funny. To good sleep.
Is right slapping there. your
slap
cheeks
those
in the morning.
That's canon.
All right, we don't see her do it, so we don't know what cheeks.
Right.
Maybe it is.
Any cheek.
Mm. Speaking of sleep, during it, we get the Monokuma theaters, which
during
I don't
sleep.
Have a- during the sleep hours, I don't have a ton of notes on, but they are all movie references. So we have, I thought it was Silence of the Lambs was the first one, but apparently it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the first
yes.
reference. And then we have The Sting, which in that Monokuma theater, Celeste is on a playing card. Yeah, and she's the king because it's a 12, which I thought was a pretty cool nod.
Oh,
and then
that.
It also looked like in the back they had like brown bottles, like from the ones in chapter 4 of Trigger Happy Havoc,
oh,
with
cool.
Monokuma's like holding like a little chess piece is what it looked like. So I thought that was like a cool like Trigger Happy Havoc nod.
Well, actually, the 12th card in a deck is the queen.
Oh my
yeah,
gosh,
you're right.
Wait, you're so right. Oh my gosh.
And she's the queen of liars. Got him. Okay, please continue.
Yeah, and then The Godfather was the last reference.
Yeah, that was the only one I knew by looking at it. Because obviously I haven't seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Sting.
I've not seen The Sting. I've seen parts of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but none of the scary ones.
I've seen
That's not my vibe.
I've seen Sting, the guitar player.
Yeah, well, that's
listen
like
to
the
that.
Same thing.
A little bit of that. Do you remember when he's in that one episode of Only Murders in the Building? Have you guys seen that show? That's so funny.
I love that show. You know they're coming out with a new season, and
Meryl Streep is in it.
And Paul Rudd.
I'm so excited. Okay. Anyway. Anywho, back to Danganronpa.
All right, everybody. I bet you didn't expect us to put our commercial break here. However, it is time for our commercial break. But there will be more Danganronpa after the commercial break, so never you worry. This is not an Only Murders in the Building podcast. This is a Danganronpa podcast. Anyway, if you like what you're listening to today, please give us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. It really helps spread the word and lets other people know about our Danganronpa content. And if you are able, we do have a Patreon. The lowest tier is just $2 a month, and you get access to a bunch of cool bonus content, including Ultimate Nurse Files and Caroline and Marin Shenanigans Files and all that good stuff, and some bloopers too. So we'd love to see you on there. And with that, we'll be right back after the break. Hi, everyone. This is Caroline. I just want to give you all a heads up that in the second half of the episode, we do discuss themes of depression and suicide. If this is not something that you're comfortable listening to, please feel free to skip the second half of the episode and tune in next week. But yeah, we just wanted to give that heads up for anyone who needs to stay safe and not listen to that content. If you live in the U.S., the Suicide Hotline and Crisis Lifeline is 988, so give that a call if you're dealing with anything relating to that. Thanks, y'all. Keep yourselves healthy and safe.
I have a note about Himiko's magic powder. I think it's cocaine.
I was going to say that. But then why is she sleepy all the time if she's on cocaine?
That's a good question.
Withdrawal.
Great point. Yes. She's out all night partying. And so during the day, she's like, oh,
I'm speaking of withdrawal. Can we talk about how Monokid is literally going through honey withdrawal in like the morning, like wake up episodes? Like he's having tremors, he's having agitation, he's having visual hallucinations. Like that That little bear is not well.
He's got DTs.
I know. Yeah, he's not doing well. And then we obviously, he dies in the execution, which is pretty interesting, but I won't jump ahead too far.
I do want to talk real quick about Mono Kid. There's one thing prior to his execution. He has a quote where he says, "Nothing beats crashing a funeral. It's way better than wedding crashing. I'll throw in a wedding every now and then, but funerals are insane, like fishing with dynamite." And that is a word for word quote from the movie Wedding Crashers that Will Ferrell says.
Oh my
word
God.
Word for word. Oh my like goodness. I went back and watched the clip. I was last night, I actually texted Maddie and Caroline because I was freaking out. I went back and watched the clip. It is the exact same quote. Whoa. Which makes me feel like Mono Kid is based on some Will Ferrell characters. I don't know, because it would track, right?
Do you think that in the, I wonder if any of our listeners know the answer to this question, in the original Japanese version, is it also that reference, or is it a reference to a Japanese movie perhaps?
Right,
or,
like is it that's a such localization a good question. Thing? Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that'd be so interesting.
Let us know if you know. And so I don't remember when exactly this is said, but it's kind of in the jumble of this, all of this we're talking about. Kokichi says, talks about, quote, "one of those lies that make us more united" or whatever. And it is amazing. Like this, the fact that he knows that lies can do this, like unite people under like false information, and that power behind it is like, I mean, he is scary. In this chapter, I love him, but he's so horrifying. And it's like, we have not had this kind of person in our game before that truly just wants to he views it as a game, you know, like Byakuya wanted to win, to leave, but and he wouldn't be beat, but like Kokichi is treating it like it's like a game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love him so much. It's unreal. Like, favorite antagonist. Oh my gosh. When they go up to him and they're like, "what's your alibi?" And he's like, "I was in the library smashing Rintaro's head."
I screamed. I screamed like, at that.
Oh my gosh. He does not take this seriously at all. And everything he says, he's just like pointing out other people's like, almost like humane flaws, and it's just like iconic. It's so good. Oh my gosh, I know that he can be mean to people. I'm not saying that he's not, but like he does something to the other characters and just adds so much to the dynamic that I just love him. Yep 10 out of 10.
He definitely makes things interesting. Like I think in a lot of ways he's smarter. He's probably smarter than Byakuya. Like, he might be the smartest Danganronpa character, like one of the smartest characters in this entire franchise.
Because
he just knows, like, he's like self-aware and like sees through everyone. Because he's like, oh, a liar like me can see through other people's lies. But like, he's not wrong. Like, he sees through everything.
Right. He is both like Byakuya is very smart, like brain smart, but Kokichi is brain smart and emotionally intelligent to the like to the point where he can like read people, which is a scary combination. That is so horrifying.
I think he's probably the most emotionally intelligent character I've ever like seen in fiction ever, and I mean that. I think he's one of the most immature characters I've ever seen in fiction. But I think he's emotionally brilliant.
Right.
And like, yeah, like when they're going through that game, the escape game, and he's like, yeah, like, let's work together. We messed up last time, but I'm sure it'll go well this time. And everyone's like, yeah, but he doesn't mean it at all. Like, it's just like, oh, his whole thing is just this mind game. And I love it. I
so
eat it
true.
Up.
I do too.
I was getting major sketch vibes from Shuichi throughout this whole chapter. Like, I vaguely remember when we played through it the first time being like, this man is the murderer. When he like leaves the room and then comes back and then a murder happens, I was like, okay.
okay.
We got him now, boys.
I know, but yeah. I was like, that would be too obvious.
I don't know if he did that in Trigger Happy Havoc, the sidekick character, Sayaka, was the murderer. or no, no, I guess technically she wasn't,
but she plotted a murder.
Tried to be, yeah. Yeah. But
true.
And that's like, when I knew how it ended.
Well, I think it was just like when we got to the library and he was like, hey, look at this door. And they had been looking for a way out of this place for the entire like previous few days. And then they find this door that they can't get into. And the assumption from Shuichi is like, this is the mastermind's door, instead of like, this is the way out that we've all been looking for. Like that to me, it was just like, he was making a lot of assumptions that were just really weird, you know? And then like, in like when the actual murder is happening, I think it's Kaede is like, we should hide in the library and then we can catch the, you know, the person. And Shuichi's like, no, 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 we'd have to confront the mastermind if we did that. And then like the little alarm goes off and he's like, okay, it's time to confront the mastermind. Like, he was just 180 on so many things that it was just very, I don't know, I was a little sus of that guy. Yeah,
I can understand that. And I think it's just because he's such a little weirdo.
Yeah. Period.
Such a little weirdo. It's neat. He does trust us immediately. And I wonder if it's because he thinks we're hot, or if it's, you know, because he actually sees something in us. I think it's that. Plus, he has a crush on us. But
on us, the Ultra Hope girls.
Right. Us, as in the three of us. Yes. But yeah, so I just kind of like, was like, it's sweetie trusts us, and we know, well, we think we're trustworthy, which is amazing. Oh, but don't we all think we're trustworthy and then we do something that makes us not trust ourselves anymore? Haven't we all been there? I mean, like,
yeah. Ugh. Well, that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Maki. When they're like going around and getting the alibi, she says like, oh, am I a suspect? And Kaede's like, no, I didn't mean that. And she's like, I should be, like, you should be treating me that way. And I was right. Like, oh. Yeah, and she's right. Like, I don't know, that made me like her a little bit.
Kaito, when we were in the AV room, says something very similar where he's like, no, interview me until you know without reasonable doubt that I didn't do this, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, mad respect. Yeah. I wanted to, did you guys get the bonus scene with the nail painting?
No. What?
No. You didn't? At one point when you're like walking to the dining hall or something and Tsumugi is standing in the hallway, if you talk to her, she like asks you if you want her to paint your nails later. And if you say yes, then that becomes one of your free time events later on. Aww. You just like, you go meet her in the game room and she paints your nails. And then you guys should look up like a YouTube video or something of the bonus scene, because it's cute. Because Tsumugi like paints Kaede's nails and Kaede's like, oh my gosh, they're so pretty. And then Rintaro shows up and is like, oh, I can do a better job than that. And he repaints Kaede's nails and she's like, oh my god, they're amazing. And Tsumugi's like fuming in the corner.
That's funny. I didn't know about that.
I just thought it was so funny because A, like lesbian energy happening a little bit between Tsumugi and Kaede, I think. Oh my gosh, I think. And then I think Tsumugi is a little jealous when Rintaro steps in and takes Kaede's attention instead of her showing off her.
Don't worry,
Smooks,
they're both dead. Oh, so no competition anymore.
But it's a really cute scene. Also, Rintaro is definitely queer in some way. 100%. And I love him. Yes. But he says it's like, oh, Kaede's like, oh, where'd you learn to paint nails? And he says something about like, oh, he has a bunch of sisters, which is cute. But I also think he's definitely queer.
I was bummed that he died. We
didn't
really talk about that.
I was so bummed. Yeah. I was shook. Like, I was so shook when it turned out to be him as the first victim. He was actually one of the last people I expected.
Yeah. And wow. It was a bummer, not only because he's a cool seeming guy, but also he was the most mysterious, I felt like, of everyone. You know, he's the one who we don't know his power, or not his power, lol, his ultimate ability. This is the Marvel Universe.
Check, we don't know his quirk.
Patreon if you'd like to watch Marvel quirk movies with me. But yeah, no, he's like, he was so interesting and we lost him. And like, that stinks. It's like so much lost potential.
Well, so this is a theme in chapter one of Danganronpa, because we think that Sayaka is going to be important because she's been our friend since grade school, and then she's the first one murdered. We think that Byakuya is going to be important because he's Byakuya, and we're like, why the hell are you here? And then he dies. And then this is a very similar instance. And so this is like a pattern, and we're going to do a full episode more unpacking the parallels between the three games and the individual chapters and stuff. But this is like a very, very big example of that being a theme in
absolutely. And it's so funny to me that it worked a third time. At least on me it worked,
right?
Did not expect it. I did not see it coming. I was like, oh, he's the last person it'd be, and then I was like, oh my god, he's dead.
Oh no.
My next note, if it's okay for me to share.
Angie
inviting everyone to like pray with her, like pray to Atua before they all die, because she's like just totally accepted the fact that they're all gonna die. She's like, let's pray to Atua, it'll all be okay. I think there's like one or two characters who say, like, isn't there at least one who says like, sure, why not, like unexpectedly, who just like goes and says like, yeah, what, I don't remember.
Was it Ryoma?
I feel like you're right, but I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, like, it might have been Ryoma to be like, oh, it couldn't hurt, right? That reminded me of this story, and I don't know if it's actually true, but my dad used to tell this story about my grandpa, my mom's dad, when he was in the Korean War, and they were like about to like go out to war and do war things, and they all, like the most of the crew, like were all gathered around, and they were saying a prayer before going out. And it was a Christian prayer, because like 90% some percent of the squadron, I don't know the terms,
squadron
were Christian. And my dad always tells the story, and it probably didn't actually happen, but it sounds like something that totally could have happened, and it's funny. So he says, like, my grandpa was there like praying, saying like our fathers or whatever, and he looks over and he sees his friend, like, I don't know, Ted or something, who is Jewish, who is also kneeling and praying with the rest of them. And he looks at him and he's like, what the hell are you doing here? And Ted looks back and it's just like, it couldn't hurt. It's like, my dad loves to tell that story. And when he's like, you know, talking about being open-minded to different religions and like all of that, and being like, yeah, it couldn't hurt. It just reminded me so much of that. I was like, this is the same moment.
Yeah, that's fun. That's so cute.
I actually thought it was really lovely that she offered that. And like, she also said like a blessing over Rantaro's body after he passed.
Yeah, that was sweet.
Which is really nice. It gave me like, in game two, do you remember when... I can't remember her name. Squish.
Hyoko.
Yeah, Hyoko. When she like made like a shrine to like memorialize. I always find those moments really sweet when they like actually take a moment to like reflect
on the passing of their games. Friend.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think that's really cool. So that was kind of a nice addition, I thought. And it felt really true to the character. Like it felt like something Angie would do. So that was nice.
Yeah. And she says a prayer for Kaede too.
Yeah,
right. True.
After her execution.
And kind of like Mondo with his jacket over Junko, similar vibes of that. Yeah, I know it is, because it's like in those situations, it's like sometimes all you can do is pray.
Yeah.
And it sucks, but like it's something, you know, so it's just, I totally agree, Marin.
I feel like I could have been one of the ones to be like, sure, why not? It couldn't hurt.
Right. Like, what are we going to do at this point?
Talking about the motive. I know everyone was waiting on my analysis of how much at fault the kids are in this game. Big moment here. This is 100-0 on Monokuma here. Probably not a surprise, but we've talked about it in the past. In Chapter 4 of SDR2, it's the exact same thing here. Anytime a time limit is put into place...
everything changes
because that's like, it's not the, it's, yeah,
I know,
I mean,
right,
how, yeah,
like, and Kaede did perhaps the only feasible thing that made sense to try to stop the mastermind. Like, she was only trying to murder the person behind it all. And I can't blame her for that, you know, like, yeah. So yeah. I'm with you.
I honestly feel like the time limit could have been a bluff, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, I absolutely think it was. Yeah. And I have a reason why, but I'm going to have to save it for the spoiler part of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing is just like, and an idea that I thought would be explored in this chapter, but wasn't, was like the idea of, you know, oh, like the railroad track problem, where it's like, if one
person, trolley problem,
right? The trolley problem, that's what it's called. Like, where it's like, okay, like one person has to die, but the rest of us get to live, you know, and that's better than, you know, all of us dying, you know. And I'm surprised that wasn't explored, but I also think that because Kaede was around, people weren't yet in that mode of thinking about it that way. They were like, oh, there's got to be a way to fix this. It's almost naive of them to like not even consider it. Not naive, but they don't even consider it. And I think it just shows like there's a lot of camaraderie in this first chapter that totally goes away when Kaede is gone.
Yeah, there is a lot of camaraderie, but I also felt like this game, I didn't feel like the players, will say, I'm thinking like Kokichi now, the players of this game,
yes,
were as close as the first two games. Like Trigger Happy Havoc, SDR2, it felt very much like, oh, like we're stressed, let's go explore together. Let's, you know, like, who are you? Tell me about your passions. Like, I'm so excited to know you. Whereas in this one, it was like everyone, like, leaves. Like there's that scene where we're all in the cafeteria and one by one everyone's like, I don't trust you, I'm gonna go be alone by myself, like why would I talk to you, why would I tell you this, like telling people off, being really rude in some cases. Like Mew is very violent with her words, Kokichi is really mean with his words. Like, yeah, so I thought that this was the most hostile group that we've had so far.
I definitely think it's an interesting dynamic. I do agree with Caroline's earlier point that it's not like anything we've seen before in Danganronpa. Mm-hmm. Like this is a new beast.
Definitely.
This group and this killing game.
Yeah, definitely.
I had a question. This one concerns Ryoma's offer to let someone murder him so that no other people would not expire from the time limit. Because he was like, I think we're going to have to maybe put some trigger warnings on this episode for like suicidal topics, because it seems like Ryoma does not have much of a desire to live. And so for him, it's like, if anyone's going to get killed, like kill me. Like, I don't even want to be here, you know? So
yeah.
I have a question. Was Ryoma's offer selfish or selfless?
I think it was both. It was selfless because it gave them an answer to a question that's not easy to answer. It was selfish because I think he belittled how much his death would affect the rest of the group. Like even with him offering, that doesn't mean that his death would not impact the group at all. And it was not a solution in that. It was a selfish solution in that it would start the killing game. It wouldn't solve the end problem. It would be like a Band-Aid, and it wouldn't really put them in a better place. It would really more fulfill something that maybe he wants, like you were saying. So, yeah. That's my thought.
No, I totally agree with you, Marin. And it's funny, this theme today of my day today even has been like having like both of those things are true. Both that he's selfish and selfless, those both are true at the same time, and like holding space for those, for two things to be true at the same time. And that's more of like in my personal life. Obviously this is just a question you asked about this game, but yeah, no, I think it's easy to think about things in a very binary way, and you know, I mean, it's really, it all is true. So anyway, that's my opinion too, because it's not a purely selfless sacrifice. Not at all. The next thing I have is the idea and concept of these like motion sensor cameras is kind of genius.
Yeah.
Shuichi, like, I was like, wow, that's like a good plan. Like, that makes sense, you know? And then there's that weird scene with Mew, Wendy Lee. We get to hear some of her voice acting in like longer form lines, which is pretty cool. But she... you can really hear Clover and Mew a lot. Like I hear like Clover from 999. Like I like him like, oh my gosh, that's like I can hear Clover, you know, and that wasn't the case with Akane. I couldn't hear Clover. So yeah, it's really cool. I love her voice acting performance as Mew and also as Clover, but Mew, obviously. Yeah. And that bowing scene is so weird.
It's so weird. That was another part of Kaede's existence here that just made me like cringe. But it worked. And we got to see the side of Mew that's like, you know, different.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, she really isn't as strong as she puts up to be. It's like almost like a coping mechanism. She's a very interesting character. I really like her a lot.
Yeah.
I like Mew a lot too. She's one of my problematic faves. I had another note kind of going off of the when they're setting up the cameras. And this is, you know, something obviously I didn't notice until the second playthrough here, but it's just a little detail that I really appreciated this time, just little character details. When they're setting up the camera and then or the setting up the cameras, and then Kaede mentions that she likes Rube Goldberg machines. That's kind of like, I think that's supposed to be our first hint to what she's scheming. I was completely clueless to that, but I know Caroline saw right through everything. Yes. But I did notice this time that the scene where they're like investigating the vent in the library right before they start setting up the cameras, you can see a change in Kaede when she starts saying like, yes, this will definitely work, blah, 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 referring, you'd think, to the plan to catch, like take pictures of the mastermind. But in her head, she's saying that this will definitely work, the plan to kill the mastermind. And I think this is where she gets this idea and like solidifies it in her mind, because after she rearranges the books and she says, yes, this will definitely work, I think it's a new sprite that we see for the first time in that moment. It's not like her usual determined smile. It's like her face goes kind of dark, like almost like angry in a determined sort of way. And that was just a subtle character detail that I thought was like just a really cool like detail that they added in, that, you know, for your first time playing through, you wouldn't think anything of it, but
right,
like, oh, that's a different facial expression, like her mind has gone somewhere else.
So so I know I talked earlier how much I love this, that this reveal, like all this stuff. My one complaint, this is my like one, I have a few, but like this is my one complaint with this whole twist ending thing, is I feel like I just wish we got to see more of Kaede being mentally capable to pull something like this off. I just don't think we get any hint of her intelligence, like, and that could have been an easily solved problem. That could have been her idea to do the camera and sensor, right? Like, or something, just to give us like a hint that she actually realistically could do this, because as of right now I'm like, I know she did it, but also like I don't think she is smart enough to pull it off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I do. And I think it would be so cool if one of the things we were debating is like, did she actually do this to catch the mastermind, or was she doing it because she thought she could pull off the perfect kill? Like, if that was a discussion that we could have, I think that would add just another layer. But we all kind of know that she was doing it just to get the mastermind,
right?
Just based on how she is. And so, yeah, like, she's a horrible liar. She is maybe the worst liar of this entire series. Like when Shuichi, they're like post-murder, Shuichi's like, ah, the books look the same, and she's like, yes, the books that I placed look exactly the same as when I placed them, ha ha ha, I put them there to prevent people from entering the library,
remember?
And that is all.
Remember, like, when I did that earlier? Like, I know, it's so funny.
Yeah, it's just yeah, little yikes. I mean, I know Kokichi can sense lies because he's really cool, but so can I in this. Like, come on.
My next note was, I actually really loved the heart-to-heart between Shuichi and Kaede in the classroom before all this goes down. I thought it was really sweet. I think Kaede's like optimism can be over the top sometimes and a little like unrealistic, but I also do think that like she is a really good friend, and I think that she would be a really good friend if she was real, but but I think she's being a very good friend to Shuichi. And I also wanted to say, I feel for Shuichi a lot here when he's like talking about his past and like the guilt that he feels after kind of solving the case that made him the ultimate detective, quote unquote, when it was really like he feels bad because he like put someone in jail who was just trying to get revenge for something really horrible that happened to their family. Like, you know, just a morally gray area there. And I think that I feel for him because, you know, it's not his fault that that person went to jail. Like, he's not, he wasn't the judge who decided what that person's sentence was going to be. And, you know, he wasn't the one who committed the crime. You know, uncovering the truth is a detective's job, and then someone else's job to decide the consequences of the truth, blah, blah, blah. But it's still like probably quite a burden to bear, just knowing that you in any way may have like contributed to someone's suffering or to an injustice. And like, this is probably a terrible example, but like at my job, I've had to get a thicker skin with things that like feel like they're my fault, but they're not, because like, you know, it's not easy. Just like, even if I'm the bearer of bad news for a patient, like, you know, you have skin cancer, or like, I'm sorry, your medication isn't going to be covered by insurance and we were out of alternatives. And then they get upset and I feel guilty. And I know it's like not my fault that this bad news needs to be bared, but it still feels like I'm the reason they're upset. And that's probably like not a good example to compare to Shuichi's, because like, I'm kind of just the messenger in that situation, but versus he feels like a very deep sense of responsibility for being like, I'm the one who figured this out. And if I hadn't done that, then this person would not be suffering this injustice or whatever. But
yeah.
So yeah, I feel for him. Like, I agree with Kaede that it's not his fault, but I do understand completely why he would feel really guilty from that and feel remorseful.
Annie, it sounds like you need a Kaede in your life. Maybe it's like a waifu.
Yeah,
I think
know.
I might need a Kaede in my life.
Maybe.
No,
make sure.
Oh, go ahead.
Pacific's wife is coming out before this episode, right?
It's out. Yeah.
It's out. Yeah.
Good.
It's interesting because this sort of, you know, up to this point in Danganronpa, the trials have been, you know, very definitive. Like, it's like, oh, this person murdered this person. Like, that is like, this is what happened and they're guilty. And it's, we feel as a player okay putting, you know, maybe not like murdering these people who are murderers, but you know what I mean? We're like, okay, like justice was served. They did something wrong, you know? And then this sort of brings up this concept into our minds of like, okay, well, this is unpacking that sometimes justice is complicated. Justice isn't black and white. There's like a lot of gray area, you know? And so it's like introducing that idea. And it is interesting because up to this point, it hasn't really been covered.
Yeah. And that actually, that goes really well into my next note, which is, you know, obviously Kaede is the murderer and we see her execution, which I know I'm jumping a little bit, but in this chapter, when Monokuma is crushed by the Exosol and then comes back the next day, the trope death is cheap comes up, which is basically the trope where important characters have a tendency to die. And so, but they might not stay dead is the idea of the trope. That's like a common thing in this series, as we've seen Monokuma die over and over and he keeps coming back. Right. And so because this trope occurs in series that has that trope go on, tend to also follow the deader than dead trope, which is where they overkill people to show you that they'll stay dead. And I think that that is really, really shown here in this execution of Kaede, because they want you to see the difference between Monokuma's death, quote unquote, where he's smushed and comes back, and Kaede's death, where, you know, she's horribly and disturbingly murdered.
Coming back.
To show you that she's not coming back. Yeah. So yeah, it's just kind of an interesting thing that I didn't really realize that those tropes played so much into each other, but that is very much a Danganronpa thing, is to deader than dead to show you when they're gone.
Yeah.
When they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Oh my God. I haven't watched the execution yet, but I'm just like, I remember it so vividly. It's so terrible.
So bad.
Oh, go ahead, Caroline.
I was just gonna say
that, like, the same note.
I know. We were like, the other thing that is interesting with this, with Shuichi, is Kyoko, as an ultimate detective, looked for the truth. She was all about finding the truth. And Shuichi is afraid of finding the truth. And that is like a very interesting distinction. And yeah, and the truth is scary.
Just something, another note that I had, I don't know, I wrote this whole paragraph just on my emotions, circling back around to how shook I was when Rintaro died. I wrote that it felt like Kodaka really just set the table for a nice feast for me and showed me to my seat and then yanked the chair right out from under me on my way to sit down, and I crashed down onto my ass and broke my tailbone. That's how I felt discovering Rintaro's corpse, because here I was like, oh my god, this character is so interesting and mysterious. We're going to learn so much about him. He's going to be like one of my favorite characters. And then he was just dead. So I was like, wow.
Damn. I actually remember the first time when we played this game, you being shocked. I remember that distinctly.
She was like, I can't believe they killed him. And I was like, oh yeah, that's true. They did.
It's like, yeah, it was him. Like,
Maddie just was in love with Rintaro.
Yeah, that's true.
In that a way that neither of us were.
Yeah.
Another note about Rintaro that I have is I was so annoyed by this, the fact that like I thought it looked like there was like blood on Rintaro's left hand and like a little bit on the camera, and it didn't look exactly like a splatter pattern. So like my first playthrough, I was at Marina Caroline, know this, I'm sure they remember, I was so fired up. I was convinced that there was going to be some kind of twist related to that, like, oh, Rintaro didn't die immediately, he was like messing with the camera with his bloody hand or something. But like that turned out to be nothing, and I was like so angry because I was so convinced that that was an important detail. And this was just like one thing that was a little frustrating to me, because I feel like up till now Danganronpa is typically like so on point with the nitty-gritty details, in including in the artwork of like every murder. And I feel like this time it was just like a little thing that like just wasn't quite as consistent. Like I you know, I guess it just ended up, I guess we can just assume like it was blood splatter all along, but like if they gave the artist some more liberties or something, like whatever. And I ended up assuming it meant something when it didn't. I was just a little frustrated because I felt like this was just a little lapse in the artistic details that Danganronpa has not, like Danganronpa has not erred on that up until now. And so I was surprised by that. I was a little like,
Speaking of the details, can we talk about how Shuichi remembers exactly where he put the dust in the card reader?
Oh my god, I know, I always crack up at that so much.
Like, what?
He's like, no, the dust is still there. It's like, okay, buddy.
All right, bud. Like, period. I'm not gonna contradict that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god, I just finished reading Misery by Stephen King, and I hope this isn't too spoilery. Do you guys mind if I like,
no,
it's not like
I don't
a
care.
Huge spoiler for the whole book,
yeah, go but, for it.
Misery by Stephen King is about like this crazy woman who has like this author guy held captive in her home, and the author's definitely like a self-insert OC of Stephen King's. but at one point he like breaks out of the room that she's like keeping him trapped in. He like breaks up the door with a bobby pin or whatever, and is like looking through her stuff while she's like not home, and he looks through this like creepy scrapbook of, I won't spoil what the creepy scrapbook is of, and then he like, he doesn't want her to find out that he like escaped from the room, so he goes back and like locks the door behind him or whatever. But then later on she takes it out on him because she knew that she knew that he had been snooping around, because she laid a hair across the scrapbook and then went and checked, and the hair was gone.
What if like an AC breeze went in and like moved the hair? Like what?
Like
I've heard of that before though, of people doing that.
And she put like a tiny like a thread across like desk drawers that he opened, and then they snapped, and like he would never have noticed them opening them. Like you'd never notice that, but like she went back and checked all of them and was like, he's been snooping. Huh. And then she chopped off his foot.
Did we start talking about this because of the dust?
Yeah.
Okay. The dust in the card reader.
Just to make sure I didn't miss something.
I have a note that just says, the fact that anyone would think Gonta did anything / is the mastermind is foolishness. That whole conversation of Gonta even being a suspect in this murder, I was like, Are we stupid? Like, no, he is.
Okay, but his honesty was so good. That was actually one of my favorite parts of this, where they were like, Gonta, could you have done this? He's like, yeah, easy.
I could have, right?
Yes, no problem for Gonta.
Oh my god, he is such a fool.
And then Samugi's like, oh, poor thing, you shouldn't be so honest.
And also, it's canon, you guys, Gonta eats doors for breakfast. Yeah.
Okay, he kind of gives me, you know, Kevin from The Office.
Yes.
You know how there's like that whole theory that Kevin is actually like a mastermind gambler who like has been like stealing from the company for years?
Yeah.
That I feel like is where their heads were at when they were accusing Gonta, is like, right, maybe what he gives off secretly, Kevin vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He's secretly a genius.
But yeah, it was crazy that they Gonta really
is the mastermind.
Real quick, there's an Ultra Despair Girls poster.
Oh my god.
Yes, there is.
However, asterisk, it says coming soon, question mark. But then right after it, I think it's Kaede, or it might be Shuichi, says, is this one of Monokuma's pranks? And the other one's like, probably. And I'd just like to remind everyone that when we interviewed Kadaka, we asked who he felt he was most similar to, and he said Monokuma.
Yeah.
So when he says, is this one of Monokuma's pranks? It could be Kadaka's prank. Breaking us all. Let's not get too excited yet.
No, you're absolutely correct, actually. Oh my gosh. Why is the library called the reading room? Do you see that?
Library, it's like
the sign above the doorway says reading room.
Does it?
Yes. And I was like, what is
too much?
That? Also, why is there inappropriate graphic content in the video library?
Gonta is gentleman. I really like Gonta's bug purse. I want to put that out there.
Literally heart Gonta's whole fashion, his whole look with the bug purse.
Yeah.
Obsessed with the bug purse.
Why don't we have bug purses?
Yeah, but he's got the nice suit, jacket and pants, no shoes though.
Right, right.
The dogs are out.
Oh my gosh. The long, luscious brown hair that, I mean, I wish I could have that volume. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh my god. I kind of like, obviously he's so annoying, but I kind of adore him, like, as a character in this game. Like, just as one of the group, he brings something. It's not the same. It wouldn't be the same without him.
It's almost like he's the opposite of Kokichi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's so unemotionally intelligent or emotionally unintelligent that it's endearing. Like, it's like,
he's such a silly
yeah,
guy.
I could throw that shot put ball. Like, you're not reading the room, bud. You're not reading it.
But you know what, though? I appreciate his honesty.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I think we could all strive to be like Gonta in terms of honesty.
Also, I do gotta say, he be strong.
He can lift do be hold. Strong.
He do be working out.
I have one last note before the trial, and that is that Cospox is a real thing. I have seen it at the dermatologist.
Oh my god. Cospox? I remember watching a clip of Chris Turgliaferra playing through chapter one of this game and being like, what the hell is Cospox? That is the stupidest thing ever. And just being so annoyed at it, which is so funny.
I think, I honestly, to me, that felt a little bit like it felt like maybe something they put in like last minutes to the game, because maybe someone raised the possibility of, ooh, a disguise. Someone could have disguised it. Like, Sumugi's ultimate cosplay, she could have just disguised herself as someone else, and they had to just be like, no, that's not what happened.
Right.
But like, they had to play it up and make it part of the thing. They couldn't just like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I kind of wish just they had like, just left it.
Yeah.
Like, I right, kind of wish they had just said she could have.
There's other evidence that proves that it's not her, so.
And right. Kaede would not have let that go. Like, if they were like, oh, Samugi could have dressed up like someone, Kaede would have been like, exactly like how she was with Shuichi, like, I know it wasn't him, I have to stop this kind of thing, you know? Like, I don't know, I feel like she would have taken the exact same route.
Yeah.
Especially after this nail painting scene. They're close.
My gosh, they're besties. Well,
history will say.
I really like the gay panic like there's a scene, I literally took a note of this, like Kaede's like gay panic when Tsumugi is like, take your clothes off. Kaede's like, what? And I'm like, oh my god, you are like anyway, it just reminds me of little me. I feel that. Been there, bestie. All right, everyone, that is the end of today's episode. There is no Bedwed Behead this week, but we will have one next episode. And tune in next episode for our spoiler-full V3 notes for the second half, because we just figured it would be good to talk about the spoiler stuff as well as the non-spoiler stuff for this game, just given everything. If you know, you know. If you liked what you heard today, please give us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. It really helps out the podcast. And we do have a Patreon. The lowest tier is just $2 a month. Get access to a bunch of cool bonus episodes, some book club, some Marvel's movies month stuff. And that's all we got for you. We're on Twitter, on Instagram. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast everywhere. And thanks so much for tuning in, y'all. We love you. See you next time.